Hi, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to Arvada High School's second community interview podcast. I'm Jeremy Jensen, one of the assistant principals and director of curriculum and instruction at Arvada High School. We really appreciate your time in listening to the stories and learnings from our community members and hope this format allows you to access these conversations wherever may be convenient for you, wherever you may be. In this episode, I sit down with one of our fantastic science teachers, Dr. Barb Stewart. Barb teaches nutrition science and chemistry at Arvada. She also runs the Link Leader program, which is a peer leadership program that teaches our students skills to be community leaders and become role models for a student body. She's also starting a student-centered health and wellness club for students for this upcoming school year with one of our ESL teachers, Carolyn Kegris. Note that this episode was recorded on July 21st of 2020, prior to Jeffco's decision to move to a hybrid model after a two-week remote start for the school year. In this podcast, Bob shares about her own educational and work experiences and how these experiences led her into teaching. She discusses recent learnings about anti-racism, thoughts about increasing engagement by providing students with choices and movement, and what she's planning to incorporate into her classes, the Link Leader program, and her new health and wellness club this coming school year. It was really fun talking to Barb, and I hope you enjoy learning from and about her in our conversation. Here it is.
All right.
Well, thank you so much, Barb, for joining us here today, or joining me here today for our second episode of this untitled podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk with you. I haven't gotten a chance to like sit down and ask you too many questions over this past school year, and I just started last year, so this is exciting for me to just to get to know you a little bit more personal level.
Okay, cool.
So Barb, just tell me about your journey into education in Arvada.
All right, it's a little long, even though it sounds like it should be short, because I actually started as an undergrad, as a freshman in secondary education. Like, I wanted to be a high school teacher. So I started as a chemistry major with a math minor and a secondary ed minor. And that was 20 years ago this fall in the year 2000. And what I found was at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, I'm from Chicago. And I found that the chemistry program really kicked my butt. It was like really competitive and not as fun as it was in high school. And I was getting like what I thought were failing grades, turned out to be A's and B's with the curve, but I was like having panic attacks, like I can't do this. So I got out of chemistry. And the way I did was I found a new subject that I had no idea about. I took a class called food science. I was like, well, this looks fun. You know, I like food. And it was amazing. And so it was just like food chemistry, you know, kind of like what Duncan and Smith are going to teach. And then I took Fundamentals of Human Nutrition. I was like hooked on this stuff. And I was like, oh my God, I love this. So, and that's actually the same class that I'm teaching to this day at our school for college credit. The Fundamentals of Human Nutrition. So those kind of sparked my interest in this area of applied science that I was not exposed to in high school. So that's something that I think is cool to let our students know about, is topics they might not hear about at home or whatever. And so I switched my major into food science and human nutrition, and I got involved with some undergrad research. And so at that point I was like, wow, research is so cool. Look at this. Why be a high school teacher when I can be a professor? So I just got like really cocky about it. And so I ditched that secondary ed minor and I was like, I'm gonna be a professor. So I went right in and did my PhD. And that was an ordeal, you know, that's not easy, but it taught me a lot. And during that time, I found out I didn't like research as much as I thought. I was not competitive enough. I should have known from the whole chemistry ordeal, but not competitive enough to do all that grant writing and put myself out there. And I didn't want to devote my life to like one topic because I actually have so many interests. So by the end, I was like, okay, I'm not going to be a research professor, but darn it, I'm still going to finish this PhD and I'm going to be a teaching professor, because what I loved the most was just being a TA and teaching. And I had a lot of people encourage me to do that. However, after that, it was really hard to get a full-time teaching-only job at the university level. I did teach community college and so on, but it was always like spotty. Like, they call you up in August, like, can you teach this one section or whatever, and it's like not a full-time job. I did all these other little things. I was a research coordinator for 2 years. That was a full-time job with a human research study, and it was cool, but it's not like a long-term vision to be a research coordinator. And I got into group fitness. I taught group fitness. I was a personal trainer. I was a health coach. I even like sold supplements, you know, all that jazz. I even took some time and tried to be a YouTuber for a while. That is still out there on YouTube. And came back around when I moved to Colorado because I had to do some soul searching, like what the hell am I gonna do with my life? And I took some of those inventory tests where they tell you like what you're good at and what you should do. Guess what it said? Remember, I took like a really long one. I might have even paid some money for it. And then it's like spits out what career you should be. And it literally said math teacher. So I guess I'm treating that like my magic eight ball or whatever. And, you know, but also I did the yoga teacher training, and that's kind of, you do a lot of self-reflection in that. And they had us go and do volunteer work. And at first I didn't want it. No one wants to be forced to do volunteer work, but it was good because I ended up at an elementary school. And I remember just being at that school and just like feeling at home, like I wanna be at a school. Like this feels good to be around the students, right? And so then I found the UCD program. It's called like the Urban Community Teacher Education Program. And when I went to that info night, I remember just they're talking about like making a difference in students' lives and everything. And I just like started crying. And I was like, this is my calling, right? So I did that and then came back around and then here I am. So it took a while. So that's that.
That's an awesome story. Like what?
Took an extra decade.
You have though. That's fantastic.
Thanks.
And because like, how was that experience? Like getting your doctorate. Was that you said it kicked your butt?
Yeah, right. Like of course I wanted to quit. I didn't like having to do the research I was doing. It was not fun and. But it was hard, but
it led
you
eventually to like figuring mm-hmm. that out, and now you're pretty. Solid yes. and like this is what was meant to happen.
Yeah, right.
And you transitioned, so you've been at Arvada for how long?
This will be my sixth year.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. And you started off in math.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
then what was that transition like to go from math to science? Like was there a lot of big differences this mm-hmm. past year?
It actually was no big deal. The only thing was I had three new preps all at once, you know, and that's hard because I also had the wheel class. But the nutrition I've taught before, so it wasn't too bad. And chemistry I love, so that was fine. There's a lot of math in chemistry, so I think it benefited me that I taught algebra first and kind of knew how to lay out problems pretty clearly, in my opinion, mm-hmm. and then just do the same when it came to the math problems in chemistry. And I'd say I was fairly successful. So it wasn't too bad. And I mean, math is science, and science is math. Like, math is just the language you use. So I think a really cool thing that's exciting is the possibility for integrated classes. I'm all about it because I just have so many interests. I can't like narrow, you know, ever focus on like one thing. I love everything. So who knows what the future holds.
Totally. Your vast knowledge of like so many different things leads itself so well to application both, I think, in like the science and math world. So we're
Thanks.
Just... again, like so fortunate to like have somebody with such experience.
Aw, Jeremy, thank you. You're so kind.
I think I skipped what actually led you to Arvada specifically. Like,
not a lot. I lived here. I really did want to work in the community, you know, where I live, because I think that's important. And I had a connection that got me the job, let's just say. She got me the interview, my mentor at the NOICE program, you know.
Okay.
At UCD. So.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Very cool. Tell me a little bit about like some of your successes with PBL, with projects. Like, what are some of the best things that you feel like you've done recently in your science classes that you're like super proud of?
Oh, yeah, it's been a challenge because I think I had like too many things going on, so I wasn't able to plan any like big PBL, but we did, I mean, all year long, small projects, at least where students can take ownership of something. I think that's one of the first or the basis off of which to develop a PBL, and others might say community involvement. So that's like where I struggle, is the community involvement. But anyways, in nutrition and in health sciences, the year was just full of mini projects where students could pick out of a variety of topics. And so it was like a jigsaw, because they would end up presenting a lot of the information that I would otherwise lecture. It made the class so much more fun for everyone and so much more interesting. So for example, if we did micronutrients, these are like vitamins and minerals in nutrition, it's a very dry topic when I lecture it, because it's just like this laundry list. It's literally like 2 pages. I made a note catcher for them of like every single vitamin and mineral and what they do, where the food sources, and et cetera. And so instead, students could pick one and present it, and that way they get to pick what they're actually interested in, and then we get to hear from a lot of people, and we get to see it presented in different ways, although they had to cover these certain, I don't know, benchmarks or whatever. And you know, for example, a girl who actually had iron deficiency anemia picked iron, so she's a little bit of an expert in the area, and she can talk about it, and it just makes it more relevant. So that's one example, made class more fun. I mean, there's always more to do with this. I want to do like more community, for sure, more community stuff. But with COVID now, who knows how that will look. So,
yeah, it'll certainly change things.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you really believe in a lot of like voice and choice in order to get students engaged. Any other strategies that you kind of go to quite a bit in your classroom?
Yeah, what I learned, and I could do better at it still, but what I learned from my evaluator was that, you know, it's good to get students up and moving when you can, and not always, because they might not feel safe if it's just like too much commotion all the time. But if they sit all the time, then their brains kind of go dormant. They're going to start to fall asleep. And I know that happens to me a lot. And it's actually one reason I do stand up a lot at our meetings. Sorry. You guys are awesome. So yeah, getting them up, you know, the Kagan strategies and the different stations, and I love quiz trade, and doing circles, so proactive circles for getting to know them, but also getting up and going somewhere like the hallway or going outside and moving. You just get more blood pumping to your brain, and so kids kind of just wake up.
Totally. I feel like every time I walk past your classroom, it does feel like there's a lot of engagement. Like, students are very comfortable just being at various spaces around. It feels like you're doing labs just constantly when I walk past.
Thank you.
Yeah. I haven't spent a ton of time in your classroom itself because I wasn't your evaluator, but I popped in a few times, and every time I've been just really impressed with the high level of engagement.
Well, we had some really cool labs and stuff, thanks to Laura and all her hard work planning. Laura Schoenfeld in chemistry. So,
totally, yeah. Awesome. So what are you guys working on now in your department, or in your class in particular? Do you have like some big plans for this coming school year that you wanted to incorporate?
It's top secret. So
okay.
No. Laura was working on a cool PBL involving rocks. It's not my expertise, so I actually stole her idea to do something a little more in my expertise. And so instead of like minerals from rocks, I do want to have chemistry students each pick a mineral that would be in their body, just as I spoke about the iron. And there's so many, right, that we have floating in our blood that we don't even know. Some of them in trace quantities. Like, did you know we have a requirement for vanadium and chromium, these things that are toxic in high amounts, right? And so students can pick different mineral and report on it, and I hope to communicate the idea that the dose makes the poison. So that's kind of maybe a little far out for some people, because they see like crazy stuff like eat this or don't eat this, like this is bad for you, right? And it's really the dose, like this, you can have like the smallest amount of something that might actually benefit you. These larger quantities are what could kill you. Stuff like that could be a good message. So that's for chemistry. In nutrition, I want to make our diet analysis project better. And so I'm looking for any feedback, you know, if you guys have it. But in the past, I've always taught this project as a personal project. So it's like confidential. I tell them, hey, you're going to analyze your diet for a week, but don't worry, I'm the only person who's going to see it besides you. That's how I've always taught it. But now I've realized it's very boring. And if we want to teach collaboration, there's zero collaboration going on there. And so instead, I want to go with something like, we're going to talk about, hey, why might you not want to see someone, or why might you'd be afraid to share your diet with somebody, okay? Because maybe people are judgy, and maybe they're gonna push their opinions on you, or you don't know if you're eating right, if that's even the right way to eat. And so we would talk about like how people judge each other, and then go from there to say, well, what if actually having a support system could help you do better, right? And go from there to have a small group, perhaps, that they communicate with on this project the entire time, with the agreement of not putting forth judgment about what the person's eating or how much they're eating. And then that could help a lot more, because there is a goal setting component to this project. And so when they get to that part, we'll incorporate some accountability. So those are some things, and I'm definitely always up for feedback on those things. So.
That sounds awesome. I want to like be in this class, actually, like yes. This project.
And, yes. Like, you're not the only one, actually. Yeah.
And I love the concept, I think, of doing like some of the social emotional things in conjunction with like the biological or the chemical side of things, mm-hmm. to like be able to like reconcile both of those things. And like, it just makes it more holistic. And that's really a fantastic idea.
Thank you.
I think you listened to the last podcast too. So this question I want to ask often is going to be the failure question. Like, what's been your best failure?
Oh, okay. I didn't prepare for this question. So,
that's okay.
I mean, in my life, you could say, you know, some major experiences. I don't know if you're just getting at like in the classroom, and it might be my first year teaching. Can I tell this story? So my first year teaching, I had a fight in my classroom. And so that was hard, because I was like all over the place where I was struggling. I felt like my classroom management was very poor. I was like helping a student while these other two guys started fighting. And then they got on camera, or, you know, on their phones. And what it showed was that I was like a fight, flight, freeze. So I was frozen, mm-hmm. and I stalled too much, and I didn't know what to do. And then I got in trouble. Gina called me down to her office and talked about it, and I was in trouble, and Jerry Robbie was there, and they said, you need to act right away, right? And you need to get in there. And I'm still a little unsure. I guess I'm not supposed to touch students, but there's all that. And so I was sad I messed up, because I hate being a failure, but it just let me know, first of all, that shouldn't have happened in the first place. Second of all, you need to be like really quick on your feet as a teacher. And I do think I have improved. And then there's a third thing. Jerry Robbie also, she said, you know what? I think you're afraid of your students. Is that true? And that was like eye-opening. I was like, I guess I am. And that leads into, you know, talking about some of the other questions you have. Mm-hmm. But I think I improved in a lot of those areas. And a couple years later, I had another almost fight, but I was able to get the kids to go in the hall. I was able to break it up and get them to Taylor right away to talk. So there was no fight. And then they came back and apologized, and they said, Miss, we're so sorry we put you through that. It was just because I had a different relationship with them, like up front, where I felt comfortable getting in between them and preventing it. So
what I guess mm-hmm. like sort of between then and now, like what's sort of different then? Like
you can't be afraid of your students, because if you're afraid of them, you're putting them as like others. Like, I can't connect with you. I'm going to try to teach you information, but beyond that, I'm sorry, we don't interact like beyond that, right? Whereas we need to get more comfortable so that we see our students more as equals, or more of at least not like this total other category of people in the world that we can't help as humans. Like, if you saw someone like who's gonna hurt another person, wouldn't you do something about it, you know? And then next, that you have to be in a state of awareness in your classroom, and that comes from experience, but it also comes from like being able to let go of the perfectionism of the lesson to be more present with what the students are doing.
Would you say like that's the biggest move for people, like to mm-hmm. be more more equitable, or?
I mean, that these are all just interrelated concepts. It's not just like this was not just all equity, you know, or whatever. This was like a lot of like moving parts that fall into place after you become more of an experienced teacher, I would say. And so, for, you know, looking back, it's like, whoa, I was like, I did it. I was like, I made it at our bad high school. I mean, not all the way. It's everything is a work in progress, but it felt like okay, like I can do this, right? I'm not going to quit this job like I quit so many other jobs. That's me.
Equity. Yeah. I know that you said like this concept is like sort of intertwined into all the things right now, but yes. Like what do you feel personally is like the biggest move with moving towards promoting equity for our students at Arvada or students in our nation, whatever?
Yeah, this is tough because I've done a lot of work on this. The UCD program is all about unpacking white privilege and learning about groups that are have been oppressed and can't really thrive in our current system. And I did the book study twice. like culturally responsive teaching and the brain, and that's a phenomenal book, so way to go Beckwith for picking that one out. And then the New Tech conference last week, there were three different sessions on anti-racism. So you know, during that time I was just looking for answers. I was just like, tell me what to do, I need help. Like, here I am, a white woman, and I've gone through all this training. I feel like I don't know what to do. And they didn't give any solutions. No one's an expert on this. There's no one like tip, like go-to strategy. But here's like my take on all of this. And this is all part of becoming trauma-informed, which is a process. And so I think it has to do with some things I've already mentioned, is that we all have implicit bias. We all are labeling and judging others as we go, because that's part of survival, that's part of being human. So the first step is like, oh, we all do this, okay? People can't say, I don't do that. No, you're human, you do that. So the first step is you say, you have to recognize that. And then you have to like look in yourself of like, when have I done this specifically? And what could I have done better? And so, you know, again, if you say, I've never done that, I'm not racist, it's like you're lying. You're not actually digging deep enough in yourself. And then another step is, this might come before it actually, would be like, how do you judge and label yourself? Because that's the person you have the most conversations with. That's the person you have the most interaction with on a day-to-day basis, is yourself. So how are you labeling and judging yourself? And I'm like the worst at this. So I've been kind of exploring that this summer. And when you recognize that we do this all the time, you just want to take another step of like, well, what effect does that have and how might I do this better? Because I'm going to label and judge people, but I don't want them to be at a disadvantage because of my actions. I don't want to let my thoughts like become actions. And in this career that we're in this profession, what I also have learned lately is that we have an obligation to be anti-racist. Not just say, I'm not racist, I'm all good, right? But we have like an obligation to stand up for social justice. And that's something like I need to work on. But the judgment thing, you know, we're all doing it. So like, here's an example. Like, we're labeling people and we're putting them as different. Like I said, with the fight in my classroom, like, oh my God, that's not me. So I will not have anything to do with that. And that's not true, because we're all humans and we should all be like watching out for each other. And so equity, I think, is putting yourself at more of the same level as other people. So this is what happened to me recently, because you guys probably think, oh, Barb, she's like this Miss Perfect Yogi, love and rainbows and unicorns everywhere. So she doesn't have any issues. Well, I did, and I'm glad I recognized it. It wasn't a racism issue, but it was a political issue. So I've been talking to my neighbor a little more this summer, and she's like my age. She has a young kid too, so I thought, oh yeah, we have a lot in common, so we're getting to be friends. Well, she had to bring up politics. And then the second that happened, and I realized we're of different parties here, I just kind of remember my gut reaction was like, I just like looked away, you know, lost eye contact. I started turning my body away, like I'm gonna leave now. I just started thinking like, that's a shame. She could have been a good friend, you know? And then I got home and I was like, whoa. Like, I just dismissed her. Like, she's not human anymore. She's just that. And I'm this. And she's less than me. And I don't agree with her. And it's over. Oh. And you know, who's to say who's right or wrong? And so that's just a simple example of this happens all the time. And we, like, shut people out. And And so I think you just got to like reflect on these things and come to realize, well, okay, I'm going to go back and just treat her again like I did before. Why should it matter?
Yeah, like a person.
So there's that. Yeah.
And like, and I like your, I really 100% agree with everything you said, just about like the openness to like, you know, be self-reflecting. And mm-hmm. I've been doing a lot of that myself this summer myself. You know, I finished the White Fragility book mm-hmm. early in the summer, and then I'm just reading now How to Be an Anti-Racist, and I really connect with this idea about mm-hmm. you know, yes, we do need to like accept people for who they are and really get to know them at a human level and talk with people, but also if there's ideas that need to be challenged and pushed, like be comfortable making that next step, because that's what it really means to be anti-racist, and I think that's what it's going to take to like get to a more equitable.
That's more challenging for me. Like right now I'm just like dealing with this, or like exploring this concept of judging and putting people as other, and like you usually think of them as like inferior to yourself. So I'm kind of like on that. That's what I'm thinking about, but also to be more proactive in putting forth ideas in your classroom to like show the support for everyone. And that's, I think, is super challenging. But I don't know, as a staff, I would continue to just explore this topic of how we're willing to see students as whole people. I think a lot of us say we are, but then we still have trouble with like the deficit thinking, remember? So there, it's like underneath, we're not. And it's not like a quick fix, but it's like a continual process of working on this. And I really, really would like love for some deeper conversations on this topic.
100%. Yeah. 100%. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for answering.
Of course, this, yeah.
I'm kind of moving on to remote learning. Do you have any suggestions on anything particularly that like worked for you during that time?
No, I didn't do a good job. The only thing for me was like I did start to just simplify everything, and then that tended to be what the students wanted. I mean, they wanted like that anyways, right? But can you, you know, imagine, put yourself in their shoes, sort of thing, and simplify. And then we got to do a better job to continue to make connections. And I don't know exactly how, because a lot of these students, they're not even showing their faces on the screen when you do a Zoom meeting with them. So I don't know how to get them to engage a little bit better over the computer. So I am no expert on this one. I just want to keep things simple. I want to support them socially and emotionally, but those are like uncharted waters. So please let us know what we can do.
We're figuring this out and trying to make improvements along the way. We're figuring this out as a country, a state, a school. Anything that you would plan to do differently? Like, how would you like this?
I would like to do more one-on-one check-ins, and but that takes so much work. But I mean, I got to find a way. I don't know if I could use possibly like Remind or something and do text messaging with the students, something that they'll actually do and respond to, just to say hi, how are you doing, to have individual check-ins. Because from that New Tech conference, the thing that resonated with me was that a lot of our students, when they're home too much, that's not pleasant for them, because school was their safe place. And we need to let them know that we still are like their safe community, even though they're not at our place, and we are still there for them. So we still need a way to make a connection, and I believe individually, not just like a classroom full of, you know, a Zoom meeting where everyone, like, you don't even know if that kid is actually there right now because he's black screen or whatever. And so we just need more support in how to do that. I don't have the answers for it. I'm so sorry.
No. You don't apologize for uncharted waters, like you said. Yeah. It's about the what leaders are, like what they've looked like in the past, and maybe any iterations that you're planning to make going forward.
Yeah, this is will be my fifth year doing Link Leaders, but now who knows with the remote situation or, you know, what's going to happen with this. But every year it's looked a little different. We get a group of upperclassmen, and then they connect and they have like a small group of freshmen that they interact with all year long. We typically would do a once a month lesson. The lesson was somewhat social emotional, but it also involved like a game or something to break the ice. And it's like mixed in its like success, and it's been difficult for us because we don't have like the prep time. Myself and Jamie True, who did this, we didn't really have the prep time, and the students themselves, the link leaders themselves, this was not like a priority. It wasn't a class. Like say how Stuco is like a class, you know, if it were a class, it might be better. So there's some drawbacks, and our freshmen and our students as a population, they're very difficult to work with. So you've got like some of your best students as link leaders, but then you've got like the general student population, and the link leaders like don't understand why the freshmen are not doing what they're asking them to do. And we train them as much as we can right now, but we could do more. Last year we got them trained on restorative practices, but that was just like a one-time training, and some of them did more training, so that was great. And we do freshman orientation, and this year I don't even know at the time of this recording what's going to happen with that. But the reason this program is important is related to being trauma-informed for us. You know, I hope that by now we are all informed enough as a staff to understand that when someone doesn't feel safe, right, they have like their limbic system out of control, they've got that amygdala hijack, and what happens is they're in like a fight, flight, freeze, and when that happens, they cannot exert use of higher level thinking or executive functioning, so it's basically inhibiting learning. How this relates is like, imagine a freshman coming on in, like how do they feel? Like they're frazzled and they're either ready to fight, like they're like, look at me, I'm the coolest, or they, you know, flight, like they just kind of check out, or the freeze is like the very similar, and you got the freshmen who really don't say much, or they aren't showing up to school, and this is a huge problem. But what can counteract this, what can calm the limbic system down, is really having others who welcome you and make you feel part of the community and make you know that it's safe, make you understand that you can do this. I did it. Look at me. I'm all right. You can do this, right? And so those link leaders can serve that purpose to actually help boost graduation rates down the road. It can have that effect at different schools. It has. So it has that effect, and every year we try something different, and it's just like, oh, we're not quite there yet. But what I do want is we need more contact between the two groups, the freshmen and the link leaders. We usually do once a month. We really need like twice a month. And even now with, you know, our social distancing, I don't know how that's going to look. So, yeah.
Well, thank you for all the work that you've been putting in to like, you know, really, because you know, the peer-to-peer sort of interactions, like kids respond well to that.
Yeah.
Like, and it's so much of a different level just naturally than they do to adults. You know, I think there's oftentimes like a barrier of like, okay, I'm a different, you know, stage in my life than these people that are telling me what to do versus right. Like, okay, you're a lot closer. I can relate to you
exactly.
In a much like easier way. Mm-hmm. And you guys can give me some advice about navigating these things. So thank you so much for like all the work to put into like trying to make that happen and continuing to try to make
you.
That happen.
Yeah.
And I know it's not easy, like
yeah,
you said.
Yeah, right.
It takes some lots and lots
perseverance,
of effort.
Yeah.
Perseverance, exactly. anything you're really excited about coming out for the school year?
Last year, Carolyn Keggers asked me to do a health and wellness club with her, and so I was just like, sure, let's do it. So we don't really know what we're doing, but I'm excited. And also I was able to get a little grant money to order like a microphone and speaker for group fitness, because I'm like a certified group fitness instructor. And again, social distancing, I don't know, but if they'll let us go outside and do a kickboxing class or a yoga class, please let me. I really want to.
is the club like designed for the students or for staff?
Oh yeah, the
both,
health and
or
wellness is okay. For students.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What have you guys talked about so far about like what kind of things you might want to incorporate to that? Because that sounds fun.
We don't really know. Like maybe we'll make a health fair or like the some public service announcements, or we'll find ways for students to get better real-world experience in the health professions. You know, if we can like find some connections somewhere, if anyone out there has a connection, that would be awesome. Or we might do some cooking together. Those are all like some ideas, yeah. The garden. Yeah.
That's cool, yeah. And let it evolve as like the students start to provide some like excitement about certain things, that the direction that they might want to go into.
Exactly. Thank you, Jeremy. Yeah. That's what I should have said.
No. That's what you meant.
That's what I meant to say.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
How about you personally, like personal professional goals that you might have, like looking forward to years down the road?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any big lofty goals because I'm a recovering perfectionist and type A, you know, ambitious type. And so being like overly ambitious kind of like killed my life. So I'm just trying to like go with the flow, and I want to, as a teacher, just continue to get better at being present with the students. And that's my goal.
Absolutely. A big advice for people. Like if you were to give one piece of advice to somebody starting off in teaching or yourself from years past, what would you say?
It is the same as what I've been talking about, in that I think you should simplify your plans for the students. They'll appreciate it. They need that actually for the different levels we have in our classrooms to like, you know, chunk things and have your lessons straightforward, not all roundabout, like you don't even know where you're going with this. I mean, the teacher knows, but the students are like, whoa, and they get lost, right? So simplify and be purposeful about incorporating time to get to know students. You can't just say, oh yeah, you know, I'll just like get to know them on the fly here and there. I mean, some teachers are great at that, but I'm not. So I started doing the proactive circles, which Ziegler really showed me to, you know, to do that. He showed me the way. So thank you to him. At first I thought like, that's a waste of time. Look at all of them sitting on their desks, you know, having a good time, whatever, having classroom meeting. But that, I think being intentional about planning something once a week, whatever it might be, and call it whatever you want and make it your own, or let the students make it their own. They love it. They might not like it at first, of course, but then they eventually are, you know, asking for it. And you can incorporate academic questions. And so it's not just a waste of time, because it's like an investment. It pays off. So those are some tips.
Mm-hmm. That's really fantastic. And it's so important to make it work for you.
Yeah.
And while maintaining that level of connection and human, mm-hmm. you know, interactiveness. So, mm-hmm. Barbara, has been awesome talking with you today.
Thank you.
Truly, thank you so much
for taking
the time to come in here during this COVID situation. And I've really enjoyed just picking your brain. So thanks for being here.
Yeah, you're welcome. All right.
Thanks again for tuning in, everyone. I hope that the opportunity to hear Barb's story will lead everyone to get to know her a bit better and spark further conversations. As you can tell, she's very easy to talk to and has a wealth of knowledge on many topics. If you have any suggestions for a title for this podcast, I'm still searching for one that can represent the essence of this project. Reach out if you have any suggestions. Thanks again, and I look forward to talking to everyone very soon.